Good afternoon. It's Alexander Hayes here from the Oethica Group Productions, and today in our very first inaugural podcast, which we are blessed essentially with an important guest today, Adjunct Professor Anne Paulina, who's recently completed a Doctor of Philosophy with her PhD thesis at the University of Notre Dame, Broome Campus in Western Australia. The PhD thesis is titled Marawara First Law Multi-Species Justice, and that focuses on the Declaration of Independence, well-being of land, living waters, and Indigenous people. And today I'm joined by Anne Wagaba, who is a Nigana Warawa traditional custodian from the Kimberley region of Western Australia. Good afternoon, Anne.
Good afternoon, Mabubara. Ngajina Nilwalan Palina Ngayu Imarwaraman and Ngai Manajara Nigeranganga. Just acknowledging that we are on Jugun and Yaru country, and I'm speaking to you from my home, which is beautiful Broome. So thank you for the opportunity, Alex, to come and share with your listeners. And it's a great honour to be part of an inaugural conversation with not only Australia, but hopefully the world. Thank you.
Absolutely, and the nature of our discussion today, which I am really keen to bring the listeners awareness of, is the fact that you've completed a really long experiential research, poetry, film, peer-reviewed publications and book chapters in one, like really interconnected, large body of work from country there. And so in completing that through the University of Notre Dame and Broome Campus, that's a substantial amount of investment of your time and while you're running everything that you do, importantly, there every day in the Kimberley. Can you provide the reader, that's us, and the listeners, with some of the insights that you've experienced on that journey? Like, could you maybe point to some of the key highlights that you've found through that second PhD journey process?
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things is it's all about story, and that's the Indigenous methodology. And I think part of this is how do you tell a story that are going to bring the people with you in terms of what's the greater public interest in the story you have to tell? Because as we know, as global citizens, there seems to be an overwhelming body of literature, both in science and a whole lot of other things, like what is it that is going to motivate people to bring them on the journeys so they can invoke an ethics of care for where they live and their place-based connections to country? So I think that's really important, is how do we tell this? And I guess it's really interesting because, as you said, my thesis is very comprehensive. In fact, it's a little bit testosterone out, because to do a PhD by publication, you only need to do 4 independent papers and get that out. But the story is an amazing story. It's a great story. It's a long story. It's a story that captures the hearts and the minds of the people by first locating us in country, which is place-based. So this is one of the things is, okay, what is happening in the regions? How do we tell that story? Because we're not individuals. We're part of a collective. So I think one of the important things is that it is about collective wisdom. Most of the papers, the majority of papers, I have co-written with amazing authors from across the nation and across the globe. And this is what I'm saying, is that we need collective wisdom because we are dealing with complexity. So none of us have got all the answers. So part of the journey was to network, to build on the relationships I had started prior to my second PhD, and to work with people who I believed could bring some insight to actually help them to illuminate what are the chaos crisis that we're living in, and how do we work together collectively so that we can decolonize ourselves by at least starting from a framework of cooperation, of trust building, of valuing each and individual as part of a collective that is working towards a greater good of a greater cause, which is the protection of our commons for our greater common good. So that was one of the big things, is to understand, first of all, that we are dealing with complexity, and in order to help right-size the planet and the chaos that we have created as human beings, there needs to be more than just one person looking at things. And, you know, for those of you that are listening that are science and research-based, you know we're talking about triangulation. So we're bringing in lots of different voices, lots of different ideas, lots of different systems thinking, because these are a range of different people that work across multiple disciplines. So part of that, as I said, I think the biggest thing is we are dealing with huge complexities at the moment in a range of different scenarios across the globe, and we can't do this as individuals. So that's one of the key highlights, is that we need to look at how do we take these deep dives and create new information in a way that's going to bring ordinary people with us. So you're correct, it has films, it has poetry, it has published papers, and so it has a range of different ways to tell a story with meaning and integrity.
And speaking of the integrity side, your research brings all of those stories from country in the Kimberley region of Western Australia, but also, as you were saying there, stories of First Nations people right across around the world and the globe. Now, part of that journey, I understand, is that you worked really closely with groups such as, and domains and disciplines such as the eco-legal people and then the environmental sustainability people and so on. And each of them have their own ways of working in this space. Can you please explain what the priorities are that researchers, they must now address in relation to the concept of authorship? And in that, in the context of the Kimberley, Matawara, River of Life, being the Fitzroy River and its people, I note, is now the primary author of these bodies of information in a scientific discourse. Can you explain what, you know, that priority to the lay reader? How would you bring that across?
Yeah, no, I think it's an interesting question you posed to me, because one of the big things is that, as I said, we're dealing with complexity. So not only are we trying to understand the system, we're also working very, very hard to transform the systems. So part of that is that it's not just science, it's also culture, the arts, but most importantly, one of the real big intents is to look at legal pluralism.
Mm.
How do we look at developing laws that are inclusive of first law, the land, not law of man? So that's been a very, very important principle, because what we're saying is that we need to open our minds up to arrange the different ways to reimagine. So one of the things that we've been looking at is not just, as I said, science and, you know, all of these sorts of things, but also looking at legal pluralism. So one of the leaders in terms of rivers that are leading this sort of conversation or dialogue or transformation is the Whanganui, the Whanganui in New Zealand. Now, one of the things with that is that this concept of legal personhood. And when I was speaking to the elders about, this legal frame of personhood, they said to me, when I spoke about our river, the Matawara, they said, "E non-human being." So I had to look at how could I expand or start to create a conversation around the emergence of ancestral personhood. Because we as Aboriginal people, as traditional owners, not just here in Australia but globally, see our rivers and our living water systems and other ancestral beings as living, as being in a deep relational respect of love. And, you know, we've had this relationship over millennia. So one of the things we wanted to do was to honour the fact that these are living ancestral beings that we communicate with, that we are in regular dialogue and ceremony and song. So it was very, very important to start to introduce the voice of the river. And I was very, very impressed with the willingness of very exclusive journals to acknowledge that and say, yes, we do recognize that the river is a entity, and you are in a way articulating the voice of the river because you have that relationship to tell the story from that deep intergenerational relationship and experience. So I thought the hardest bit would be to convince the journals, but they were very, very receptive. So you are correct in saying that Matawara River of Life is the lead author in as many publications as we can, because we want to lift up and profile the cultural authority of this living system.
Yes. Absolutely. And that's the message that was loud and clear through some of the submissions that you have recently put forward through to the West Australian government. And I understand, Anne, that, and we've had these discussions over quite a number of years, that the Kimberley region of Western Australia is under precedented pressure. There is a national and government initiative in consortia with international corporations to in some ways exploit or to access, gain access to resources within the Kimberley region. And that puts a lot of pressure on yourselves as Aboriginal communities and people when you're trying to protect the rights of that living entity. How can people listening to this podcast connect with and support the initiatives that you're involved with in protecting the Fitzroy River and its communities in Western Australia?
Right now, you are correct, is that there is a lot of pressure on the Fitzroy River. I think one of the big issues is we've been watching, and we're in communication with the traditional owners from the Murray-Darling River, especially around the Barker and around, you know, Mindy and Wilcannia. And one of the things is we're learning from their lived experience, not just from traditional owners, but from the farmers and people who are down in the system. And really what they're echoing back to us is a really serious need to proceed with caution, to make sure we have informed consent decision making that is based on evidence, that we really get a management and governance mechanism in place before we start talking about how we're going to cut up the water. So there's a real, it's been a real important time, because one of the things we've noticed is that the illusion of probity, the pretense that, you know, government or developers are going to do something, but their intent is to do something totally different. So one of the things the elders are saying is be careful of the big greedy frogs. We've seen them swallow up the water in the Murray-Darling Basin, and we know they are heading to the Fitzroy River, because really what we're talking about is water markets and water trading. So there's a real need to make sure that if we're going to go down this pathway, then we really need to be starting from a point of having good governance embedded in a management framework that is going to bring all of us to the table. Because as people know who are listening, or if they don't know, the Fitzroy River or the Murrawarra is National Heritage listed, so it belongs to all Australians. So there's a due diligence to look at its cultural and environmental values and seriously weigh that up and value that river system. It's also the largest registered Aboriginal cultural heritage site in Western Australia. So given that we were promised never, ever, ever again for Juukan Gorge, we want to ensure that never, ever, ever will they destroy the Murrawarra, the Fitzroy River. So we are passionate about working with all of the people in the region, as well as our external partners, to look at how do we do this differently? How do we set up a structure that's going to proceed with caution? How do we put all projects on the table and make sure that they're evidence-based and peer-reviewed, and that if they're not going to create harm, bring it on. But if they are, then we want nothing to do with anything that's going to cause ecocide or genocide to any of the people living in the region.
Absolutely. And thank you for agreeing to feature in this inaugural Our Ethical Group Productions newsletter, website, article, with links to all of those various initiatives that you've been speaking of, and this podcast, of course. This podcast today, we have been joined by Adjunct Professor Anne Paulina on the 10th of September 2021. And the podcast itself will link to and feature news from the Murrawarra Fitzroy River Council and the Madjula Incorporated initiative that you have in the Kimberley region of Western Australia. Thank you, Adjunct Professor Anne Paulina, for joining us today.
No, thank you for the opportunity, and I wish you well with all the future stories that are going to be shared on your podcast. It's a great initiative, and I thank you for giving me your time and, as I said, the opportunity to speak with your listeners. Thank you. Kalia Mabu.